Right, hello, good evening, good morning world, wherever you are. Welcome to the latest sparkling episode of the Wolves Fancast. In a change to the scheduled programming, we're going to be discussing the Masked Singer tonight and discuss who the Blob and the Viking are, because it's going to be a lot more fun discussing that than it is discussing the Wolves at the moment. We are, of course, recording this a few hours after what was the 70th meeting of Wolves and Crystal Palace, and I will wait to be corrected on that probably. So we've had a little bit of time to collect our thoughts on the game and Wolves in general. Tonight I've got Rich, Luke and Stu with me, who are all ready to unleash hell on my command. But first, before we jump into the game itself, I do want to start off on a bit of a positive note by mentioning the news that came out in the week about the Wolves Foundation's Feed the Pack initiative, which was launched to help reduce the effects of food poverty and support the residents of Wolverhampton. So the big eye-catching thing about this was that there was an initial three-year project that had a £250,000 grant from the Premier League, but also in an amazing show of generosity, a personal donation of £250,000 from Air Nuno. Now, to me, that was an amazing gesture and a show of connection, not just to the city, but also to the people within the city. So just want to get your guys' quick reactions to that when you saw that news come out.
I think for me, I was sort of speaking to someone yesterday about it. Actually, I can tell you who it was. It was Christian Thomas, the former Olympic gymnast, for a bit of a name drop for, I guess, a little teaser for Stories from the Pack. It'll be out next week. And we were chatting about it. And I said, for me, Nuno will go down in Wolves history anyway because of the success he has had with the club, regardless, and we will come on to it, what could potentially happen, let's be honest, between now and even the end of the season. He will always be fondly remembered and dearly loved by Wolves fans, but I think this act, for me, cements him as almost a man of Wolverhampton rather than just a man of Wolves, and his sort of stature within the local community. And, you know, I think that's massive. For someone who's kind of grown up in Wolverhampton, that, you know, he's not from round here, but for him to do that, that really sort of signifies sort of his bond with the town and the region itself for me. And I think that's genuinely quite powerful, really.
Yeah, it's unbelievable in a way, just because, like you said, I mean, it's one thing for him to not be from the town or from even in the Midlands, but to be from a completely different country and come here and have that affection for the place in the space of 3-4 years, that is amazing in itself. But to put that amount of money, yeah, it doesn't matter how much he's got, and relatively speaking, it's still a shitload of money that he's just given away for free for the people of Wolverhampton. And like you said, I mean, he's more than likely going to get a rinsing later, but you have to separate the man from the manager, because as a man, he's one of the best people probably since Graham Taylor to represent Wolves.
One of the things he did mention was that in the interview, he says that he feels he's at home now. So what did you reckon to that, Luke? Anything to read into that, or just in general?
I mean, the gesture and the act of donating that money to such a good cause is absolutely fantastic. Wolverhampton crying out for funding and donations like that on various projects. So to have somebody generous enough to do so, it's just fantastic for the city. And it speaks for what a man, what a bloke, you know. Like they mentioned, separate the man from the manager. What a man to do that. So you've got to take your hat off to him, and it just shows how big his heart is.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now I think we can all agree, and we're fully on board with that. So fair play to Nuno, indeed. So right then, let's unleash hell, as it were. Let's go into the game itself today. So a bit of a rarity. We had the Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff for this one, probably for about the first time in around a year for us. So Wolves were looking to complete a hat trick of wins over Palace this season. Only goal difference separates us before kickoff today. So as ever, we'll start with the lineups. So we knew already that Ait Nouri was going to be out Aitnori, otherwise christened as Vinagre with a shit haircut. Was that you, Luke, who christened him that?
Vinagre with an afro.
That's the one. but when the team news out, what did we think? So we had Semedo at left wing back. We had Moutinho coming for Neves. William Jose got his first start, and Hoover was getting the start as well. So who wants to take us up on their initial thoughts when they saw the lineups were announced?
I thought it was a good thing. I didn't have too many arguments with it. The only argument as far as we've got at the minute is, do we use a back four or do we use a back five? But if Nuno wants to go for back five, okay, that's what we go with. And I think from what he's got available to pick from in defence, that's probably the best defence he had to pick from. I would like to know what injury Saïss has got for him to not even make the squad today. So I thought Semedo finished the game well at Chelsea at left wing back. Herve, when he's played, he's looked tidy. You know, not an issue with him playing at right wing back. And the three sort of in the middle was the best we had to choose from. I think I would have liked to have stuck with Neves and Dendonka today. Wasn't overly happy with Moutinho coming in. And I thought the Jose should have started. I don't understand why he started. I mean, no, Jose did start today. Sorry. Sorry, it's been a long afternoon. Me personally, I know many would disagree, but I would have preferred Traore over Paulden on the right. So not too many complaints. And I was really, really positive going into the game today.
Guys, Rich, I mean, when you saw the team, I guess one of the main sticking points was around the Moutinho-Neves switch, because I think we've had similar comments around Moutinho in the last few weeks, but did you feel as though Neves should have got start?
Yeah, I mean, chiefly by the fact he's been consistently our best midfielder this season. And look, if it's about game management and sort of just making sure there's a bit of squad rotation, I can sort of get it. But then it screams a much bigger issue that we have in this team at the moment. That, look, we all love and adore Moutinho, but I can't remember the last time I saw him put in a good 70 minutes in the game, or even, you know, let alone 90. You know, you get a flutter here and there, but he is not delivering for us at the moment. And whether it's system-based, whether it's due with the player, whatever, it's just not happening for him. And that was frustrating for me, not seeing Neves start, chiefly after how well he played against Chelsea. I thought, admittedly, it was more of a defensive performance and it required him to, I know, play in a different way than he might have had to have done today. But, you know, same as Luke, I was happy with the lineup, by and large. No issues with the back line, judging by who was available. Again, same with wing-backs. Look, if it was a different result, then maybe I'd have been more happy with Moutinho and Dendonka. The fact they were both passengers for a game weren't great. And, you know, similar with Traore. I can see why he played Podence, because of what he's done so far this season. But I sort of feel with that formation against Palace as well, Traore is our best right winger. I think Neto is a better left winger, better on the left than he is on the right. So, you know, why not play people just that extra bit of positioning? If you're having squad rotation, Podence has been out for a month, so why wouldn't you keep him on the bench and start Traore, who is finding his, not, I wouldn't say form, but he seems to need a run of games to get himself going. And I know, I would have just stuck with Traore on that right-hand side, or when he actually came on, you're playing right wing because that's the only position he can really play.
Yeah, and Stu, I mean, I'll come to you with a slightly wider question as well. Not, I'm interested in your thoughts on the lineup, but also with some of our injured players slowly returning, do you think that Nuno knows his strongest team yet?
I don't think he knows many things at the minute, but I think it's just a mess. It's just a mess all out. And Pedence, for me, I think like Luke touched on, I wouldn't have had him in the starting lineup. I'd have tried right there because he just doesn't look right yet. And he's been out injured, so you can't really expect that, especially with COVID protocols and everything like that, training ground, and you ain't getting reserve games. So if that's the case with him, then it's going to be the case with others as well. And like when Johnny does come back in a few weeks' time, is that going to be the same for him as well? Is he going to need to be eased in? It's just a bit of a mess, and I don't think he knows what to do. I mean, it's just a bit confusing all round.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, I mean, I was quite happy with the team, but I know there's some debate around the likes of Kilman and Pedence and Moutinho and Neves. They seem to be the main positions are essentially up for grabs at the moment, along with the formation as a whole, isn't it? I mean, do we stick with the back five, or do we return to a four again and try and be more attacking, knowing full well that we're going to leave the back door open probably 9 times out of 10?
Problem is, we're not good enough going forward at the moment when we play a back three / back five to create enough chances to score. And we're still susceptible to concede a goal like we were today. When we play a back four, we are very susceptible to concede a goal, but we've got more chance of scoring. So it's almost like there's a good chance we could lose, you know, if we play a back three, like we did today, we lose 1-0. If we'd have played a back four, there's a good chance we'd have lost 3-2. And that's sort of how it feels to me at the moment, that we are we've got quite a lot of, and quite rightly so, if you think about it, we've played with back three for three seasons. And a lot of those players haven't changed. So we have very systematic players in that team. Now we've gone to a back four, it's requiring them to change and adapt, but they might not actually be suited to that formation 100%, or they're not used to it. So for me, you know, we'll talk about transfer in a bit, but we're missing a quality centre-half who can play in a back four. If we're playing a back three, we're missing a quality dynamic midfielder who can run parallel with Neves to really open up and stretch the game going forward, as opposed to sort of Neves doing the other side of things. So it's almost like it's a double-edged, you know, it's between a rock and a hard place for me at the moment. It's really frustrating.
I mean, we talked about this before, and I think Kim said the same thing, that we're so bad when we have a play with a back four defensively that we don't really create enough chances anyway, even with the extra man in midfield. So it is a case of, do we just get smashed every week and hope we can score, or keep it tight and we might get a draw and snatch something on the break? Because the way we are at the minute, I don't ever want to see a back four again this season, because I don't see the point. It's because we're not good enough defensively, and we don't do anything differently going forward anyway.
Could you not argue that our best performances have come with a back four this season?
Against who, though?
Arsenal,
Southampton. Was Newcastle not a back four? Tottenham. But what I was going to say, it just made me chuckle what Richard touched on. We're now arguing, do we lose 1-0 or do we lose 3-2? that's where we're at the minute. Like, how shall we lose
either
this
way
week?
We lose it.
I was going to say, it sounds even more negative when you say it back, but I don't think I'm not horribly wrong, am I?
No, not at all.
You know, we're not even talking about the positives of a formation change, are we? We're talking about the drawbacks of the one we're almost playing at the moment.
Yeah.
And I bet, we're all happy with the lineup, but you know, part of you goes, when we saw Moutinho and then Donk in the middle, which is why we touched on it, are we going to pass that ball in the midfield? It's pretty fundamental to sort of win football games.
It's such a difficult debate to have, because I think there's valid points from both sides. I think if you argue the back five, you've got the argument of we do look tighter, we give up less chances. But with a back four, we do create a hell of a lot more. And it's a bit easier on the eye, and it's a bit nicer to watch, if we're being honest, from a football point of view, because there's chances at either end. I know some people like to watch football from like it's a game of chess, and from a defensive point of view. But me personally, the more it's like a basketball game, the better.
You're saying you're not a purist?
No, not at all. Not at all.
It's a 2020 man, not a test match fan.
Yeah, very, very good point. That's a very good way of looking at it. But it's, I just don't know like I touched on earlier, I don't think either one's right or either one's completely wrong, because we're just that bad at the moment. We could play we could say, let's play a back six and we'd still lose. Let's play a back two and we'd still lose. I don't think it matters at the minute. And as well, if we're being honest, today and West Brom at home, I'll touch on, the last 20 minutes, I don't know what formation we play. I don't think the players on the pitch know what formation we play. So it all goes out the window anyway.
Well, let's get on to the game itself. We can talk about what we did or didn't create. And, well, let's face it, in the first half, we didn't create to anything, really. Let's be honest. So, I mean, it was a pretty stop-start first half. But frankly, it was a dull first half, made all the more dull by Efanikoku, I think, on Sky Sports Co. comms. I think if the game wasn't bad enough, he was putting me to sleep. But we had zero shots on target for the first half. I know Palace had a couple of chances, but especially that Batshuayi one, which he put over the bar from, what, 4 or 5 yards, maybe, but even less than that. But I think a common theme for me throughout that first half, and possibly for the whole game for us, was just basic errors. And I don't know if you guys agree, but we're just making basic errors, and it just seems at the moment that we're just completely bereft of confidence at the moment. I mean, the Moutinho's this world and what have you, they're just putting simple passes out of play, or just simple passes going to opposition. Did you see that when you were watching the game? Do you guys see a team that just frankly doesn't know what they're doing right now?
Yeah, I think for me, you look back at this Wolves team, but pretty much the first two seasons, at least under Nuno, and even into last season as well, there always seemed to be a plan when we had the ball. When, you know, how are we going to get this ball into the back of the net of the other end? And it was all measured. It, you know, in the Championship, it was obviously a lot quicker paced and expansive, and it had to sort of change and adapt to playing better calibre opposition. But it almost feels like they don't quite know what they need to be doing to progress. And I think even Nuno said after the game that we lack creativity. We're not passing the ball into, you know, the different phases of the pitch. And, you know, I was frustrated by those remarks, not going to lie, because it's like, well, what are you doing about it? Because, you know, it for me, it's, you know...
Every time we heard it, we lack creativity.
You know, we come on here every week, and I can't remember the last time we didn't... You know, we've created really good chances here. We deserve to win a game 2-0 or whatever. But, you know, it's a question of what are we going to do about it? Is it... And I can't almost quite decide whether it's a player issue, because, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, Jean Martino's an experienced player. He shouldn't be misplacing a 10-yard pass. That is his bread and butter. No formation change is going to impact that for me. So that is not Nuno's kind of fault for me. But there's obvious things that I don't think Nuno's doing right in terms of the changing of the setup at different points, and him not, you know, it's his job to then, you know, instruct the players on what to do. But if the players aren't doing it, then it is on them in a way. And then you've got the underlying, you know, probably the overarching issue of the board and the investment of the squad. But yeah, it's the confidence, it's the self-belief, more than confidence for me. And just like knowing, actually, if you pass the ball to your man, that they're going to be able to receive it and they're going to do something with it and get that ball in the right position. And, you know, I think losing Johnny over even Jimenez was a real catalyst for this, because he was the one who was so good at linking up the play and being able to do a simple pass and move and exploit that extra bit of space going forwards. And we've never really replaced that. And you could argue Doherty did the same in his own way. And I you know, that's not to discredit people like Semedo, because I'm a big fan of his and he does it in a slightly different way. But him doing it a different way is fine, but everyone else on his team need to do it you know, need to follow suit in a way and be on the same wavelength, and none of them seem to be on the same wavelength.
That second, I presume we're just going straight into the second half because nothing happened in the first half, did it?
We'll talk about the game as a whole. Let's just go straight into where we think it's gone wrong or where it just didn't work and didn't happen for us.
Yeah, because it was mixed reactions because I said Matinho was better than he had been for a while. He actually passed forward, which was nice to see compared to his usual pass backwards, then run forwards a little bit, and then it don't come back to him, so it's a waste of time anyway. But like you said, Rich, there is no. You can't now say to someone, if you just said to someone, how do Wolves play? And apart from saying shit, they haven't got an answer for you. Whereas you go back 18 months, 2 years ago, they say, well, look, play with wing backs, strung at the back, move through the gears and stuff like that and exploit the space. We were never really a pass and move kind of side other than the odd here and there. I mean, there was one today where there's like four passes and then it all went wrong in the first half, and that was as good as he got. But if you take the emotion out of everything, that team today and the team for the last month, and probably 6-7 weeks, if we're being honest, looks like a team that wants the manager sacked. And that's what it looks like. And if you blame the players, if you blame the manager or the coach, whichever way you want to jump on, but to me, that looks like a team who don't want to play for a manager anymore. Be that as it is, that's what I'm seeing at the minute. And there's only one way to come back from that, and it's never the manager staying, is it?
I think Stu's spot on. You can't say we're a team. We don't play like a team. It's like the players aren't playing for each other. There's no connection. There's no chemistry. It's disjointed. I mean, the loose, sloppy passes. That's inexcusable, and it's happening all too often now. I thought Chorley was a bit of a one-off, because that was probably the worst I've seen us in terms of loose, sloppy passing. But today was equally as bad, and I think Stu's right. They're not playing for him anymore, and I don't think you can put all the blame on Nuno in regards to the mess that we're in. I don't think you can put all the blame on the players. I think it's a mixture of everything at the moment, which is even more concerning, even at boardroom level. Like, I look at some of the players that have come in. Who's handling transfers now? Is it Mendes? Is it Jeff? Is it Nuno? Who knows? Nobody knows, and that's a concern. Like, it seems like there's a deep-rooted issue, and that's why we're struggling like we are. And we've seen it time and time again that clubs up and down the country, when players don't want to play for the manager, and then the second the manager's sacked, bang, they go on a run. And yeah, everyone calls it the manager bounce. It's not. It's because the players can be arsed again. I think the best case that I can refer to was when Leicester wanted Ranieri sacked.
Yeah.
I mean, Stu's got a better footballing memory than myself. But I'm sure Leicester was playing horrendously. Ranieri went, and literally, as if by magic, they were playing absolutely fantastic again and started winning. I think we're in the same position.
Yeah, I think that there is a degree that Nuno has had this core group of players for, you know, 3.5 years now. And you compare it to, you know, it's a really simple one, but Sir Alex Ferguson's teams, where, you know, he would rotate and, you know, strip that team and then build it back up. And, you know, obviously had that nucleus of players, but he would always look to improve and adapt it. And I guess it's even similar to when we had McCarthy in that third year of the Premier League. And it feels almost like history repeating itself in some ways, that, you know, it's ifs and buts. But, you know, there was almost a point at the end of this year. It was like, well, hang on, what do we need to do? Same as it was with McCarthy when we stayed up on the last day. It's like a decision needed to be made then. And in hindsight, everyone could see that, you know, we needed to, you know, probably get rid of McCarthy and move on. And it'll be interesting, you know, a year's time, let's say, or 2 years' time, or 5 years' time, whether we will look back on whether changing Nuno at that point would have been the right thing to do. I'm not saying we should have, but I don't know, there's interesting parallels for that to me. And, you know, it almost feels like the motivation, the you know, probably all the little things that he's done to get that extra 10% out of the players, because Wolves for a long time have been better than some of their parts. I think we can all agree that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it go especially like last season and the year before as well, that, you know, we have some really good players, but we have some average ones as well. And the fact, you know, I'm digging him out for no real reason, but the fact that Max Kilman's, you know, a Premier League centre back is testament to how we set up and what that manager's doing coaching him. You know,
he's all right.
He's okay. Yeah, no, he's all right.
He's probably man of the match today.
I like him
but,
anyway.
Yeah, no, I've got nothing against him, but
is it good enough to be starting as much as he's starting? Max Kilman is the sort of Max Kilman is the sort of player who should be on the bench. He's a squad player.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. And, you know, I could have argued at the start of this season that you should be saying the same about Sace in the position that we want to go into. I know the guys covered it in the show last week about actually we need to make those steps up and we haven't done it. And that's what's telling for me. And I don't know, but here's my, I guess, sort of hot take, that the players know that team hasn't had the level of investments it's needed, and that's why they've had the dip, rather than almost the other way around, that they've had a dip. And, you know, I don't know. It's clear that there needs to be a greater input in this team, and I don't quite see it. The solutions coming from within anymore.
So we just wanted to move on to talk about the specific flashpoints in the game. So obviously their goal was the first biggest flashpoint. I think it comes from another basic error. I want to get your guys' thoughts on two players' involvements in the goal from our point of view. Dendonka's involvement in the goal, and then also Rui, if he could have potentially done more. And I mention that because we've had a tweet in from Joe Chax, who had said that although we are playing poor, is Patricio at fault for the amount of goals we're conceding? He says, we don't concede screamers. We concede simple goals, which are right at him most of the time. And he has zero presence in the box. And then he goes on to add to that in the second tweet. To add to this, I'm nervous when the ball comes into the box, knowing that he won't calmly come and collect it. So God knows how the back line feels. So open question to the floor then. What errors did you see in our goal in regards to Dendonka and then also for Rui?
Well, I'll just get the real one out of the way. So when
I thought you would.
When was he?
On Zoom, I could literally just see me and Luke just smiling, going, "Yeah, we'll just step back on this one. Let the big man step up for a free kick."
It's just, when has Rui Patricio ever commanded his box in the 2.5 years he's been here? There's my question to everyone. He doesn't. He never has done. So what's the problem? John Ruddy said in his interview when he's the goalkeeper, he's never seen anyone else be on his line as much as he is. And because he's on his line, he doesn't have to come and claim it because the defence deals with it. What's changed? They know how he plays. And he was perfectly fine playing exactly the same way when we finished seventh twice. But this season, he ain't done anything different. He ain't suddenly turned from Matt Murray into Stefan Postma, has he? It's not a massive transformation. I mean, today was just, I mean, I've watched that again, and it's one of them things where if you were, say you're in, you put the fat kid in goal at school, the fat kid's probably going to save.
This is bringing back memories. Yeah.
The fat kid in goal at school is probably going to save that because he won't go with his hands. He'll just put his big belly out, or he'll try and go with his foot and he'll save it that way. But you look at the amount of goals that are conceded when it's right next to a keeper, right in that part under the armpit, because it's hard to get down to, because that's just how you're trained. It's an awkward situation, and it was really hard shot as well. I mean, he probably could have got something on him, but the speed it came at him, he wouldn't have saved it anyway, even if he got something to him. I mean, I know me and Luke have had a lot of thing over this, but I mean, the amount of shots that are straight at him, but when you actually look at it, he's probably made three errors in the last 6 months. Really? Where there's shots that look straight at him, but three or four of them, he's wrong-footed, which you've got no chance. I mean, that just happens. But this happens to every keeper. It's like Rui Patricio is the next scapegoat now because Semedo's got a bit of form, so we can't pick on him. And so it's the typical Wolves way that we always have to have someone. And it just seems a bit unfair. I mean, Dendonka, what the hell he's doing for that goal? Who knows? But to single out Patricio when, I mean, it'd be fine if we had a competent number two and you say, yeah, take him out the firing line. But we've got John Ruddy, for fuck's sake. Is that what you want?
Watch your rebuttal, Luke.
I'm not even... While Stu is on this podcast, I'm not even going to speak about Rui because Rui could score 37 own goals in a game and Stu would still defend him.
If he was at fault for anything, and he has been before in the past, and I've called him out on him, rightly so, but I honestly don't think he's done anything to warrant the kind of abuse that he's getting from people like you.
You know what? I don't even abuse Rui. I haven't abused him. Actually like him, and I think his handling is absolutely superb. All I merely did was just bring up something in regards to we seem to be conceding a hell of a lot of goals in relation to how many shots that the opposition are having, and I just brought it up. I don't even think I mentioned Rui. I just mentioned it as a whole because the defence has to take some blame for that as well. And the way we set up the tactics, it's not just a goalkeeper issue when we're looking at conceding so many goals from a low amount of shots on target. But everyone's jumped on it. Like, I hate Rui. And I want him on the first bloody British Airways flight back to Madeira. But I just highlighted something that just came to my attention. And with the goal today, it's a difficult one because it is close to his body. But, if he saw it late, and to be fair, Eze got some right power behind it and there are defenders in the way. So maybe to blame Rui on that goal today is harsh.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting that the guy who's tweeted it, I've completely blanked on his name, he's mentioned about him not claiming for crosses, which he's never done. He masters his six-yard box. The rest of the penalty box is not of interest to Rui Patricio, is it? But how many goals have we actually... Like, that goal today wasn't due to his commanding the box. How many goals do we actually concede where you just think, you know what, that would have been a damn sight easier if he'd have, you know, gone and tried to catch the ball 8-10 yards out and really try and make himself a presence in the box? We don't tend to do that. The only, I guess, to counteract that is, do we end up conceding more because Rui's so deep, the rest of the defence are so deep, which means the attacking team end up being further forward, and that's what, I guess, gives them more than expected shots on target, or however you want to dress it up. I don't know. It's an interesting one, because he hasn't made like absolute clangers that have conceded to goals, but we tend to, at the moment, you say, every shot that's on target feels like it's going to go in. And, you know, there's 11 players on the pitch for Wolves, don't get me wrong. I mean, today, that move started from a throw-in in their own half, yeah, basically. And there was some good movement from Palace in terms of, and again, it was training ground stuff. Watch it back. They all knew what they were doing with a couple of triangle passes and got it out wide. It was really, really basic, you know, UEFA B licence stuff. But you add it that... I think Podence started chasing, like when it first throwing happened, he almost chased three different players and got near none of them because it was 3-on-1. None of his other teammates supported him in that press. And then it's systematic, as I sort of said earlier, they're all off different wavelengths. No one really knows, you know, should we be pressing? Should we be dropping deep? How are we actually going to win this ball back? How are we going to get, you know, when we get it, how are we going to get it back up the pitch? And, you know, the goal, it's just sort of a, you know, it's, again, it's one of them where Dendonka was all over the shop for me. But
I think he let him in quite easy, didn't he? Dendonka, yeah, he let him in quite easy.
Bit systematic, isn't it, to how the team are playing? And go on.
Like I said, when your captain doesn't know what he's doing and he's squaring up to people and he's completely off his head, then that put everyone else in.
Come on, that's harsh.
I was going to say, harsh.
Zaha's been an absolute fool there. Zaha's been an absolute idiot there. Like, why does Zaha?
I'm not on a bit today. I'm on a bit. Like, I was going to say the last few weeks. Like when he was subbed and he had that. I mean, the Zaha thing is just Zaha being Zaha. I'm saying his general attitude and the way he's holding himself at the minute. I mean, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago as well that something's not right there.
I said, and, I think post Chorley game that he is Cody is noon on the pitch. He is our leader on that pitch. And I find it fascinating at the moment that they are reflecting one another in their form and outlook, aren't they? That, you know, we're in bad form at the moment. Not we can't, you know, we can't dress it up. We're not in good form. The last time I can remember Wolves being in bad form was under Lambert, but you at least had, and this is scraping the barrel. I appreciate you had the likes of Dave Edwards and Danny Bart, who, you know, were very almost tub thumping. You know, I'm a leader. I will be passionate about this. And honestly, if you said to me 6 weeks ago, 6 months ago, Wolves are going to have a dip in form, who's going to be one on that pitch rallying that team? You'd say Connor Cody, wouldn't you? But he just doesn't seem to have that, dare I say, drive at the moment, or that, you know, that, I guess, try to pull people up by their bootstraps and really, you know, raising his voice again, because it just seems, he seems to have gone quiet all of a sudden.
Yeah, when
I think that everyone's got that response. Not everybody, but it shouldn't just be rested on Cody's shoulders. Yes, okay, he's the captain, and he maybe should lead by example, but there's 10 other blokes on the pitch who can raise spirits and get the team going. You know, where's your experienced players like Moutinho? What's he doing?
Yeah, I think we've sort of, Moutinho seems to just be a passenger at the moment. To say he's our most experienced player, he needs to be a leader. You could argue the same as Patricio. You know, let's be honest, that whole spine of the team's not 100% at the moment. And to be fair, I think, look, let's try and pick out positives from the game. But I thought Jose did well.
I was going to come on to that, to be fair. I was going to make it a bit of a shit sandwich. So we talked about a negative. Now, one of the positives from the game, and there wasn't obviously many to share today, was William Jose, who had two good chances. So, Stu, I'll come to you. How did you feel he did? I know his two chances were saved, but he showed good positional sense, I thought.
No one else would have took that shot off. You know, you put Cottrell and Silva in that position, that shot wouldn't have even been troubling the keeper whatsoever. I mean, if they even turned to even attempt it is another thing. But I thought it was a great little turn. I mean, he kind of grew into the game, which you expect. Because, I mean, he came on against Chelsea and he was all fish out of water situation, which you kind of expect. But he grew into the game and you could see that he wanted it. And like in the first half when he was making the wrong decision for the runs, and he sorted that out really quickly. And in the second half, I said that's the turning shot, and then to get his head where he did, he looks promising. But again, where's, other than feeding off scraps like Jimenez used to, which is exactly what he's going to be doing now, where's his service coming from? That's a big problem.
Yeah. I mean, he's not going to have the mobility of Jimenez to run across the final third of the pitch as Jimenez does. He's going to be more of a static striker. I mean, we haven't got much to gauge him on so far, just one match and then 15 minutes against Chelsea. But it looks like once he gets up to speed and once we get the creativity for him, you know, hopefully he can be that bit of firepower to keep us going for the rest of the season.
We certainly need it. You know, we need that focal point up there, and he's a big old unit, ain't he? He's a lot bigger than what I thought. He looks strong. Looks like he'll hold the ball up well. I think a few times today he brought the midfielders and the wingers into play nicely. It was a decent performance for him as an individual, considering how shit we was as a team. But then I kind of feel sorry for him, because he looks like the sort of striker who's going to feed off balls into the box, and who's putting them in? Really?
One thing that just to finish on the game itself, one thing I thought was quite surprising was the fact that Neves never got off the bench for the whole game.
I know, Vitina in front of Neves.
What was all that about?
Something's going on, mate, I'm telling you. Conspiracy theory club.
It's tin hat time, let's get him on. What are we thinking? I mean, surely, what could possibly be a reason as to why they bring on Vitinha for Neves? And we've said that Neves has been in better form. So, what could possibly be the thinking behind that?
We're selling Neves to Atletico Madrid for £45 million.
Who are getting it here first?
Honestly, if this makes a Sunday Sport tomorrow.
Sources say.
Gibbs White a 10-year deal. I think just bringing Vitinha on was just desperation, just because he scored a worldie at Chorley, thinking, oh, we've got someone to smash the ball from distance if we got nothing else. And that's probably what it was.
Because wasn't even a worldie, was it really?
Do you not think though?
He's a Lancashire worldie.
with Nuno's sort of, not even his tactics, like his substitutions, there's no real sort of thought behind it.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, as we said before, did any of his subs help to change the game in their favour today?
Traore caused him a few issues there on the right. I think he did a lot more than what Powden's did, so that was kind of positive. But he wasn't great.
And he didn't even come on for Powden's either. He put him at wing-back.
Yeah. That's why he comes on. He's putting him at wing-back. And you just think, why?
You look at the players who came on and who was supposed to be playing where. It was like year 9 football.
It's concerning because the first time I really noticed it was Albion, and I remember sitting at home. I looked at the clock and there was about 72 minutes gone, and I thought, we're not going to get back into this game because just looking at us, we've got no shape, no identity. Like, what are we trying to achieve from this game? And today was exactly the same. Mm-hmm. So for it to be sort of like, it's becoming a common occurrence now. It's not like people can say, oh, well, the Albion game was just a one-off where we looked a bit lost. There's possibly more games throughout the season, which I've not thought about because it only came to my attention for the Albion game. But again, today, 15 minutes to go, and you're thinking, what's the game plan to get the equaliser here?
Go back and watch the highlights of that Sheffield United game at the end of last season. And when me and Jordan the Truthsayers called him out on it that day and got absolute dogs abuse. And look at the highlights from that game and then look at today. There ain't much difference because it was clueless. And it's been clueless for a long time. And people have been kind of, I'm going to say blinkered, but almost...
I think blinkered is the right word. I really did.
Just people didn't want to see because he's a god. And obviously because of what he's done and what a nice person he is, but people don't want to see it. And I'll put a rant on Facebook, which I very rarely do about football because what's the point? But the 2nd of January, 4 weeks ago, and it's got worse since then. It's not getting better, and there's no signs it's going to even change at all, which I'm sure we're going to get onto now.
Yeah, well, I want to take a bit of a more broader view, general view in Wolves as a whole, and where that result kind of leaves us, really. So, but before we do that, just want to put in a quick break so we can collect our thoughts and have a beer or drink, and then we'll go back in just a moment.
Hi, Richard here. Before you go back to hearing us dissect the latest Wolves news, some really shoehorn Simpsons references, a bit of 90s film action, of course, a bit of wrestling, I just want to do a quick shout out for our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Now, they've done a fantastic job on the Wolves Fancast website, wolvesfancast.com, please go check it out. But they're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all your design needs, from websites, brochures and signage to marketing, logo design and branding. There's basically nothing they can't do marketing-wise, so make sure you check them out at pixelyetimedia.com, and I'll let you get back to enjoying the show.
All right, welcome back to the Fancast, and right now what I want to talk about, gents, is just Wolves in general, really. We've obviously been on this winless run now. So this leaves us, I think, 8 league games without a win since the 2-1 win against Chelsea. One question I wanted to ask. I saw this on Twitter, I think, a game or two ago. Now, if you remember, a lot of people used to, their like second teams used to be Wolves because of the way we played. But that seems to have switched now. And the question being, have we become just a boring team to watch? Have we become dull? Have we lost our sparkle? I mean, now, especially taking the last two or three games into consideration, do you look forward to watching us play now, or has it become a bit of a chore or an obligation for us?
It feels like we were boring probably towards the start of this season, end of last season, start of this season. I think a lot of people have said sort of from Tottenham last year. I feel that was almost that was sort of the last great performance we put in and really flexed what we could do. And since then, it's been quite robust, I guess, and almost football by numbers to try and get it. And that sort of developed into just becoming a poor team at this point, without sounding super negative.
It's not negative, it's fact. I mean, the whole thing about all the super fans, and I'm not going to mention them because I know we've interactions on Twitter with them now, but ever since the restart, and the fans are not there, it's not the same. Well, it's the same for fucking Man City, Man United, eh? I mean,
and they, 19 other clubs.
Look at the Solskjaer in charge of Man United, look where they are. They don't have bastards, 75,000 people cheering them on. They managed to do okay. It's just bollocks. And to say it has been, I mean, that Spurs game was, it was probably one of the top 10 Nuno moments. I don't know why it won in that video, because it was a great day out, and it was a good performance. But we haven't been the same. We haven't been the same without our fans, and there's been more than enough time to sort that out. And if that's their mindset, that they need people to cheer them to get them to G up, then that's a management problem. And I've had more fun this week watching a 5-part drama about AIDS than I have watching this season. It's a sin give on Channel 4.
I was going to say, give it a plug.
It is genuinely really good. But that's what it's come to. It was more fucking enjoyable watching people die than watching Wolves this season. It's just good.
And it's... AIDS is better than Wolves at the minute.
Well, at least you can live with AIDS then. You can't live with this anymore.
At least we got Pedro Neto.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, Pedro Neto is like the only thing keeping me going with Wolves at the moment. And Paradense when he comes back, to be fair. Like when he gets back to full fitness. But even against Chelsea, and like I think after like 10 minutes, we all knew what kind of game it needed to be. But whenever Neto got the ball, it gave me a little bit of excitement, which it is what is kind of holding me on. I'm just waiting for him to really drop off a cliff form wise now or get injured, though.
And yeah, that's going to get injured soon.
That's the mindset, because it's just all a bit doom and gloom at the moment for us. But yeah, he is. By far and away, like, going to be playing for season, surely. And, you know, he's just that ray of sunshine on a cloudy day for me.
I think the two performances I enjoyed most the last, I don't know, 4 months, is Man United, even though we lost, and Chelsea, because it's the way we used to be. It's like looking back at the good old days.
Well, we had a plan. We played yes, with a plan. And on a different day, maybe if we signed Will and Jose a week or two earlier, like we should have done as soon as the transfer window opened, do you reckon we'd have won that game?
Probably. But that's, I mean, you stole the words straight from my mouth, but we had a plan and we knew what we were doing. And it was nostalgic in a way. It was nice. And then you get to that fucking shit show today. And when we're going to move on to talk about Arsenal, in 5-10 minutes or 15, depends. Can you honestly say, well, this is how we're going to approach the game? Because I've got no fucking clue.
You don't know what's coming from one game to the next. Really don't know. It's a mess, but it's a concerning mess. You know, when we got relegated from the Championship, it feels like that. Yeah, and people are saying, Wolves are too good to go down there. Wolves are too good to go. Fucking A. And when we was in the Championship, even... I was saying in the Championship, we're too good to go down. We won't go down. I refuse to believe it. But now, I am looking over my shoulder. And this isn't me thinking, I want to say it again, that Wolves are bigger than the Beatles, because I don't believe that at all. But with the resources that we have, the wages that we're spending, the transfer fees that we're spending, we should not be in a relegation battle. And it's as simple as that. And if there's any fans out there that believe that we're not in a relegation battle, then you need to give your head a little bit of a wobble, because we're sleepwalking into one at the minute.
Well, rock bottom of the form league and no winning night.
Exactly. Rock bottom of the form league. We've got Arsenal, Leicester, Southampton, Leeds and Newcastle as the next five Premier League games.
5 points.
I think 27th of February is the Newcastle game. We could be coming into March 2 or 3 points off the relegation zone.
In 2 weeks' time, well, no, by the end of next week, well, yeah, by the end of next week, we could be 17th.
And please, now, in my opinion, that's not good enough. We should not even...
We should be in the top half of the table. I mean, when we said this at the start of the season, where would you settle for? And I said, top half? I don't expect Europe, especially after the run that we went on. But you can't keep saying, oh, we're all tired. Well, if everyone's tired, well, why haven't we got no more players? And that's not their fault. It's managers.
Do you not think that's a concern? That we knew Raul Jimenez wasn't going to play for a very long time, the end of November, 29th of November, he got injured. And we only signed a striker 2 or 3 days ago. When the window opened 25 days before we signed William Jose. Come on.
The window opened 4 weeks ago.
So it took us pretty much 4 weeks to sign a striker, even though we knew well in advance we need a fucking striker.
Yeah,
that is poor management.
Remember, we've got a 5,000 player database as well of players for 2-3 years down the line. We keep getting told of under Thelwell, under the glory days.
Yeah, because they're probably all fucking 15. That's why we can't sign them yet.
It's in New York now, that is. One thing that I've seen mentioned, and it annoys me a little bit. I want to get your guys' thoughts on it. When people say it's the fact that our players can't see their families, which might be affecting them.
Oh, don't get me started.
And I saw that today, and I thought, sorry, that just doesn't cut it with me. What makes our players any different from any other foreign player in the league that can't see their family right now? I just thought that's a cop out. That is a cop out.
If anything, it should be easy for our players because they've got a nice little Portuguese clique. It's not like you're the lone Russian at, I don't know, West Ham. That would be a bit different because, as silly as it sounds, you might not integrate with the squad as well. You might be a bit of an outcast. Obviously, you haven't got friends and family around you and you're in a foreign country. These guys, how many Portuguese players are in our squad?
Nine, ten.
You've got a nice little clique there, which makes it feel like a home from home. So, I'm sorry, but that is an absolutely shit excuse. That's probably the worst excuse I've heard.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in this house since, what, 5th, 6th of November, when I was furloughed for the second time. And I'd love to not see my family every day. It'd be great. But I'm not going on here moaning a bit. Oh, I can't get up in the morning. It's the same thing what I said earlier. It's people trying to find excuses because they don't want to accept the truth.
Yeah, 1,000%. It's as my dad always used to tell me, is it an excuse or a reason? And it is. But
there's a title.
I've got a list. Don't worry. And weirdly, it's what AIDS is better for Wolves hasn't made a shortlist. But no, the whole almost it's almost touching on, well, but they're struggling mentally because of their families not being there. And I think it's A, a cop out, and it probably B, does a huge disservice for the people who are, I guess, suffering from mental illness. And, you know, look, everyone's in the same position, regardless of your profession, regardless of how much you earn. You know, lots of us haven't seen our families in weeks and months, for large parts of last year. And, you know, it's not a money thing for me, but it's the same for every other professional footballer. It's the same for every other manager. It's as Stu said, it is a excuse because that you don't want to actually admit that Nuno is struggling as in his profession at the moment.
But people who are using that excuse about not being able to see their families, get their details and go to the COVID police. Because I ain't seen my family. So it's not just these Portuguese footballers that aren't seeing the family. If you're actually going by the correct COVID guidelines, none of us are seeing our families.
Yeah.
So what's so go on now, expand on that excuse.
Again, it wasn't an issue. It wasn't an issue after Project Restart when we were doing okay.
Exactly.
Again, same with Patricio. Same with a lot of this. It's never an issue until you're losing. Nuno's family, I'm right in thinking that a lot of the I guess the coaching staff, all of their family is still out in Portugal. And again, wasn't an issue when we were winning the championship. And don't get me wrong, I know they all kind of semi-lived together and all of this kind of thing. But again, I say, wasn't an issue during the good times. And I don't think we'd be saying this was an issue, even if we, you know, I don't know, let's say if we're 10th and we just win one, lose one or whatever it was, and we're just inconsistent as opposed to just being in poor form.
Mm. Yeah, it's all one of those things. It gets swept under the carpet when you're getting the results. End of the day, if you don't get the results, then that's when the excuses start coming out or you know, people start looking for them. So
I just think some fans are scared to admit that Nuno is underperforming and we're shit.
Mm. It's because it's the first time, and it's the first time that he's had this prolonged spell. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he's had such sort of short spells before in sort of a couple of years where we didn't get a few results that we didn't, you know, that weren't going for us. But this time is a bit different because we can see there's no way out at the moment. So this is the first time in his tenure that things are really going shit and they're really going south. And some people, yeah, people just don't want to believe that, like you say, he's struggling. And it's clear to see that he's struggling at the moment. So to round this bit off, I just have one last question for you all. Nuno out? ?
The only thing, even though I've been banging this kind of, let's say banging the drum, because I've kind of been like tapping on the side of it like a little mouse, because I don't want him to. Obviously, I don't want him to go because he's a lovely man and he's a legend and everything. But if he's going to get us relegated, then he has to go. Because of course he does. But the only problem is the other question there: do you trust anyone in charge in the board to appoint anyone competent? Because at the minute,
it's Scott Sellers till the end of the season.
Yeah, exactly. There's Scott Sellers, and that's all that we know. And we know that he's been promoted internally as per usual, though they always do things. But I mean, we saw the whole Zenga thing at the start, and then Lambert, and then we dropped lucky with Nuno. There's nothing to say that we drop lucky again. And I know it's getting to the stage there where it literally can't be any worse. And we might as well disappoint Dr. Venglos, who died last week. And that's how bad it. I mean, for me, at the minute, I still would say no, just because I don't trust them to appoint anyone else. But it's getting to the stage where when is too late? And it was too late with McCarthy. McCarthy should have gone after Swansea at home in the October at the latest. And we look what happened after that. And you can say history repeats itself for the third time, but you look at that next run of results, and what do you say? Do we give him till 25 games in? You know how many games are we on now? 20, some other.
Fixtures aren't getting any easier.
Exactly. I mean, when he's cut off point, because you say, oh, another 5 games. See, if we ain't won for what will then be what? I don't know. Basic maths is eluding me. So if we ain't won a game in 12 and 13, that's like over a third of the season not winning a game, then he's got to fuck off. Simple as that. If he gets to that stage, and then you can't still then say that, but then that's my only concern.
Excuse saying, thanks for your donation, Nuno. No, fuck off.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. But I knew this as soon as that happened. My mate Boothie, you text me saying, this is a bit of a convenient time. And I said, yeah, even from a cynical outsider's point of view, you look at things, oh, Nuno's done this. Then fine, but there's a world of difference being a good Samaritan and doing that and doing your job properly. And if you can't do your job properly, then just go and feed the homeless for the rest of the year. It's as simple as that. I mean, I'd give him February if we're still in contention. And but if we don't win another game in February, then surely that's the end. It has to be.
I think Fulton need to come out and start talking. And let us know sort of what they're thinking, what their plans are. Are they happy? Are they not? If I was to say, we're back in Nuno until the end of the season regardless, then I think it would stop a lot of the arguing between fans. And I think all the fans would then jump on board and say, look, Fulton are backing this guy. So Dave from Bilston, Luke from Wentworth, Gary from Gornal, shut up. It don't matter what you say. This guy's staying, so back him. And as much as I'm annoyed with Nuno at the minute, if he got sacked tomorrow, I would be gutted, because I would prefer that Nuno does brilliant things for us. He has a stand named after him, a statue, because he's done so well. But we're in a position now where something has to change. Because let's just talk hypothetically. We can keep Nuno and we get relegated. What's the Saido fuck off?
Yeah, he probably would. I think he would.
Do you think he wants another season in the Championship?
Exactly. I've done my service in that league. There's no excuse to being in there anymore. They can forget that. No more. I'm trying to work. He said the other day, I think it's 19 out of 26 years watching Championship football. I thought, well, that's gone forever now. Thank God. I mean, it costs more hair. It could be anything else.
With the resources that we've got now, we shouldn't even be entertaining the Championship anymore. And I'm sorry if it makes it sound like we think Wolves are getting above their station, but that is the reality of it.
Rich, what do you think? I'm so sorry. Just to round this section off, what do you think, Rich? What's your views on if he stays or goes?
Personally, I think at least it's got to be a very heavy review at the end of the season, at bare minimum. I guess, kind of touching on to what Luke said, primarily was that the whole club doesn't seem to be acting to a plan. There was this big idea for project, and I guess we're at a point where there's almost a level of crisis management, and they haven't seemed to know how to react to having to alter the plan because it's not on its current course. And for me, you know, over the last couple of years, they saw, you know, from the top down, there has been a path of this is what we're going to do, this is what we want to achieve, and this is how we're going to achieve it. And that just seems to have gone really wayward in the last 6 months or so. And it then makes me then doubt, well, hang on, if they did just turn around and say, we're parting way, you know, when we see the club announcement and a shot of a corner flag. And for me, whenever you get rid of a manager, it's the, well, who are you going to bring in? And at the moment, you know, I've still got a decent amount of faith in Nuno, but I've got less faith in the board at the moment to pick a successful successor. And I think that's a real sticking point for me, especially as we all saw what happened with McCarthy. It's when you sack somebody just after the transfer window closes, because he then doesn't have any opportunity to bring in any extra players, which again is looping back to an issue with the board that we don't have enough kind of strength and quality and depth. So, you know, for me, there needs to be a big review at the end of the season, and just in a way, not hope that there's three teams worse than us, but put as much in as we can do to address it. You know, frankly, if I was Jeff Shee, the board, whoever, I'd have called a meeting with Nuno after the game today and sort of said, look, what needs to happen to change this? Say it. Like, you know, just very, very open. Do we need more players? What needs to happen? As Stu shows a photo of a Wolves corner flag, but
it's just like the corner flag of doom.
Yeah.
that brings us on quite nicely then to a section on the transfer window, really, because there's not long left, really, of this winter transfer window. It closes at 11 o'clock on the 1st of Feb. And we know we broke air dry January of signings by signing William Jose, but do we really think there's going to be a surprise sprung in the next 48 hours for bringing someone in as a window slams shut, as they say on Sky Sports? And if we were to sign anyone, where would it be? I mean, we'll address the rumour mill that there were some nefarious reasons around Saïss's omittance from the squad today. And there are some rumours that have appeared in Merseyside-based newspapers that Saïss could be a target for Liverpool. And weirdly, that we could be getting Origi the other way, which I don't know. I'm not now. We've got William Jose. Is that a desired signing, or should we be looking elsewhere? We always bemoan a lack of creativity, so surely we'll be looking for strength in depth in defence, or sorry, in midfield, or is it defence where we should be looking at? Or do you even think that we'll get anyone at all? What do you reckon, Stu?
We'll sign someone for the academy. That ain't happened yet.
Of course.
I'm waiting for that. I saw a kid for the under-18s with the mental long name, like with like Kepa beating in goal for us today. I thought, oh, that's missed that one. But I don't expect anything. But then again, we didn't expect William Jose. Then that one came from nowhere. I mean, ideally, in an ideal world, we'd sign a decent defender who can play in the back four, and a central midfielder who can pass and shoot and score. That's two players. Will we get any of them? Probably not. But that's, I mean, you look at the team, that's really all we need. And kind of take the shackles off a bit, which we've been calling for over 12 months. Just take the shackles off, just a tiny bit, just a little bit, not too much. But just, I mean, but why, we've got Vitinha. He doesn't play. I mean, I'd rather play Vitinha and Neves together. Just try, just give it a go. It might not work. It might fail, but it might fail completely, but at least we've had a go, and at least it's not Neves and Matinho or Dendonka missing his 17,000th chance of the season. Just give someone else a go, if we're not going to sign anyone. But that's your question, will we? No, I don't think so.
Go on, Luke.
I don't think we'll sign anyone. I think Stu's covered it perfectly. There's not really much to add.
That's why I went to you, mate, because I've got nothing to fucking add.
He's highlighted what I think every Wolves fan knows need highlighting and where we need to strengthen. And he's highlighted that we're not going to sign anyone because we all know we're not going to sign anyone else. We never do sign anyone in January. Well, very rarely. It's frustrating. And I don't know, it concerns me, man. Like, Fulton at the minute and what's going on at a level above Nuno, it does concern me slightly, I'm not going to lie.
Well, as ever, could any of the quote-unquote solutions lie within the squad? Because the ex-Bancastian Hoops has tweeted to say that if solutions are within the squad, then could we just put Donk back in defence and then just take Cody out altogether?
Or play Saces in back three in the middle, which he did a good job in, from my opinion.
Saces gone. He's dead to us now.
Oh, I was going to say, oh, sorry. He's joined Diogo Jota in the dead to me pile, hasn't he? I mean, there's definitely potential. I say it every time I think I'm on with Dendonk, that no one quite knows what sort of player he is, whether he should be playing at the back or in this midfield role, because he gets himself in the right positions, but he isn't a finisher, which is kind of a bit of an issue. Again, it's, as sort of Stu said, and I kind of sort of started the show by saying that we're either short a decent quality centre-back or we're short a decent quality midfielder. And, you know, those are the two positions that we need to strengthen. For me, it's almost a toss of a coin which one I'd go for. I'd personally, I don't know, actually, now I've said that out loud, I felt like I was giving up to give you a really assertive answer. I'd probably, if say stats, I'd probably go for a midfielder because we know what we're doing. Enough of those players not, they're doing with a back three. You know, just on, I guess it's harking back, but almost like an Alfred and Dyson who's got such, you know, who can kind of get everywhere around on that pitch and really kind of stretch the team going forwards. And I feel like we're missing that dynamism for me. And
you know who we missed out on?
Jefferson and, Lerma.
When Wanyama left Tottenham.
Yeah.
He was crying out for him.
If he still had legs, I think he'd be perfect. It's almost that upgrade on Dendonk in a way for me, or someone you can kind of complement it, just get a bit better going forwards, I guess.
But is creativity not the issue? I think we've agreed that, haven't we? So I mean, we've got creative players on the pitch, like in the likes of Traore, Neto, Pedence, but is it just that,
nothing through the middle?
Well, yeah, this is what I'm saying, we need someone to start it off, essentially. I mean, is it a wider point? Do we have the creative players, but Nuno's just not getting the best out of them?
I think he's getting the best out of Neves.
No.
I think there's a hell of a lot more to Neves' game than what Nuno's allowing him to do.
Well, we've seen the Everton game last season when Neves played further forward. The only time he's done it in the Premier League that I can think of, and he was incredible that day when Dendonka was the holding midfielder for a change. Neves was brilliant.
Was the Everton game that through ball to Jota?
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. And we're missing that. I can't really remember a player that was so sort of intelligent in the middle of the park in terms of playing a through ball since Milias, really.
Mm.
When was it? And I think if we're really missing somebody who can pick a pass to break the lines centrally, I can't. How often do it, really? I really can't think.
Just throwing it out there. I mean, you could even put Dendonka, Cody and Bolly before, and it never worked. But if you enter a back four of Dendonka and Bolly, and then have Otisowi, Neves and Vitinha, something like that in midfield, there's your creativity, there's your holding players, and then you've got some people who can pass the ball at the back still and who can tackle.
Yeah.
Maybe that's, if the solutions are within. It makes me sad that Hoops is not here anymore and he's a former fan casting, but if the solutions are within, then try something like that. What we got to lose? Well, we'll lose anyway, like we said.
He says the solutions are within, but he's not really trying any other solutions, is he? It's the same solutions over and over again. Like Corbinet, for example, Shabani. I mean, from the little bits I've seen of them, I know they're not what we've just been discussing, but if Pedence or Traore, for example, are out of form, give them a chance.
Honestly, if Traore was out injured and, I know, Pedence was suspended, he would rather play Dendonka right wing than give, Theo a chance.
Yeah, well, he did it the other week and he put Herve at right midfield, didn't he?
Yeah. And I feel like that's telling because they fill the bench. So it's like, well, if they're on the bench, then there's a chance they might play.
Yeah.
I noticed there was, Breno was on the bench today, which was a bit of a kinder surprise, wasn't it?
How long have you had that lined up in your notes, Adam?
About 1 hour 20 minutes.
Yeah, sounds about right. And look, we still haven't seen anything from good old Nigel Longwick either. And look, I keep making these jokes on Twitter, good old Nigel. And, you know, I know he's not a 40-year-old bloke who owns a pressure washer. I appreciate it. But I need to see him play because otherwise the jokes are just going to keep mounting up.
I've got a pressure washer. I'm nearly 40. What's wrong with that?
I've got a pressure washer and I'm not even 30. But
you say that.
As I wear my fleece again.
So what we'll do is we'll sign another striker. He'll probably start 2 games, come off the bench in 4 games, score 1 goal, and that'll be it.
So now we put the world to rights on that. Let's look ahead then, if we must, to our next game, which is against Arsenal.
Yeah, we'll lose. Come on, next topic.
That's it.
But will we lose 1-0 or will we lose 3-2? That's all we need to discuss.
Well, I mean, when we last played Arsenal, obviously, at the end of November, that was when Jimenez suffered his head injury, and thankfully he's back in the gym and training in some capacity now. We won 2-1 then, but how do we see it going now? Because Arsenal are a bit of a strange team, really. I mean, it wasn't so long ago that Roy Keane was making those jibes and comments about them being too good to go down, which ironically now we're saying about ourselves. But they now find themselves above us and they're actually one of the form teams in the league now, to be honest. I mean, I know Aubameyang's not troubling the scoring charts too much this year, but they've dipped into the January market. They've just signed Martin Odegaard on loan from Real Madrid, a bit of a football manager legends. I don't know if he's a bit of a modern day Freddie Adu, Martin Odegaard, but how do we see this one going? Because at the minute it's top of the form guide against rock bottom of the form guide. So, I mean, do we only see it going one way?
You know what? Fuck it. Wolves win. I don't know. Look, we know what Wolves are like, and I always sort of seem to back him anyway. So I just always think there's an off chance that we might actually somehow do something. I don't know. I think it's we don't know how we're going to line up. We'll do our, what do we think the lineup is going to be? We'll all give you three different answers, I think, because none of us quite know what we'll do. But I don't know. There were a couple of positives from almost, if we can take the positives from Chelsea in terms of how we were defensively and just supply Jose with a few more chances. I don't think Arsenal would be all and end all in this division. They've got some good players, but they're not a great team. And they are susceptible on their day. So I guess just hopefully in the next sort of 48, 72 hours, they can remember what they used to be.
I think because it was such a shambles today that it'll be yet another back to basics. And for that reason, I think this is how ridiculous this podcast is, the Wolves' life in general, is because I know exactly what you mean. And if we are actually organised for a change, we've got every chance. But how shit we are at the minute, we've got every chance of being steamrolled of like 3 or 4 again. But was it 3-1 last season when they beat us, and we were terrible that day as well?
That cost us Europe, really, effectively.
Yeah, I can see that. I can easily see that happening. But
I mean, if we're going to get turned over at home heavily, I'd have one to think about it, because just more and more questions will need to be asked with them, won't they?
Well, just put this out again and just edit a few different player names in. That's all we're going to have to do. So if we get smashed again, it'll be exactly the same. With the same questions with no answers, and then he'll come out with the same old bollocks. The solutions are within. No, they're not.
Solutions are anywhere, but within the moment. I mean, it is a bit of a few weeks ago, I would have been more than confident about playing Arsenal. And I probably, when it comes to the game, so I probably will just say, yeah, like 1-0 Wolves win or something like that. Same as Rich. But at the minute, as we've said, you know, it's you struggle to see where not just the next win is going to be, but the next good performance, because that's what we need to start off with, really. When are we actually going to start putting a good performance? We all banked on Chorley being a good performance, and look what a nightmare game that was, even though we won it. So I don't know. For me, they've got quite a few danger players in their team. Lacazette seems to have found form in his shooting boots. They seem like they're getting their act together a bit now, Arsenal, which I don't know. I don't think it bodes well for us. I struggle to see. I don't know. At the minute, it's bad for the minute. Not any of us can see where the next point is going to come from. And I think it's going to be a really, really tough game. Lineup wise, I'd like to get your thoughts on that, as who you drop, who you play. Rich, what do you reckon? Who's in the chop for you, and who's coming in?
So I'd keep Patricio. I don't see why, I feel like it's, putting in Rudy would be a big mistake. I'd still probably keep whoever on the right and Smade on the left. Keep the back three. Are we assuming Sace has just gone to Liverpool at this point, or is just MIA? We'll just say MIA. It's going to be easier. Yeah. So again, I'd probably keep the back three, because I can't quite see us going, well, let's put Dendonka in there instead of Kilman or even Cody, and sort of mixing up, which is what I'd potentially do. I'd have Dendonka and Neves in the middle, Traore one side, Neto the other, and Jose up front. And as I say, keep it as simple as that, really.
I'd go exactly the same, Brad. Put Otacewi in for Dendonka. Just for a bit of physical presence, which is what Dendonka's supposed to be doing, but he's not been anything.
It's funny you mention that, because Colin Beer tweeted in to say the more serious point was, shouldn't Otacewi be starting over Dendonka, given his dreadful performances in the last few games? And that was swiftly endorsed by our friend Football Neophytes.
Yeah, I wonder why. on a serious point, yeah, I mean, there's something not quite right there with him, and it's always been Dendonka plus one. But this whole thing of him, the amount of chances he is missing all the time, it's got to weigh down on you sometimes. It's got to get on your back sometimes, and your confidence and everything. So just give him a rest. Everyone else has had a rest. And it's really clutching things to say. But yeah, just for argument's sake, that's what I'd do as well. I'd put Traore, Neto, Jose up front, keep back five, and then just put Neves and Otazawi in the middle, just for something different, because we need something.
Luke, what's your thoughts on the team before I do a round robin on predictions?
I'm just going to completely mix it up. 4-2-3-1. Bolly and then Donka in the middle. Herver on the right. Samado on the left. Otazawi and Neves in midfield. Traore, Neto on the wings. Pedence as a 10. And Willy up front on his own.
Ringing the changes.
With zero service.
So, I like it. It's very attacking. I mean, we'll probably be losing 3-2 then.
Well, do you know if we're going to lose? If we're going to lose and we're going to be shit, I'd rather lose and be shit, but have a go and go down swinging.
Yeah.
Rather than just rolling over, having our belly tickled and just...
I thought you were going to say arsehole tickled then.
No arsehole today. But I would, if we're going to be shit and we're going to lose every week, I'd rather lose with a bill of bloody, with someone about us.
So what's your score prediction then, Luke, as you're on? What's your prediction? How's it going to go?
I think if we play the formation and the players that I've just mentioned, I'm going to say 4-1 Wolves.
I like it. You went from before when you were last on, you said 2-0 surely, and then you've gone 4-1 Arsenal now. Stu, what do you reckon?
So if we're organised, we could snatch it 1-0, I suppose, but I really can't see it, to be honest. I think another 3-0 defeat, something like a not a comprehensive smashing like West Ham, just beaten and like really like toying with us, was pissing us off even more.
Oh, they're the worst ones they are.
That's, yeah.
When if there was fans there, all you'd hear is, "Whee!"
Yeah, exactly.
Whee! No, it can't be. I don't think it can't happen.
If we
put in that sort of performance, I don't think he could stay.
I backed us to win about 5 minutes ago, didn't I? So I'll be a plucky optimist and go for 1-0 Wolves.
Excellent.
I'll play footballing as well.
I think we'll also spring a surprise. I've got no evidence to back this up, but I think we'll spring a surprise. we'll sneak a 1-0. I'm just gonna close off the pod with just a couple of random questions that we've had on the old Twitter feed. Vinny WWFC says, who would win a game of Tiddlywinks, Roy Hodgson or Roy Cropper?
Roy Cropper's got more in his bag.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the Cropster.
Yeah.
Cropster. And finally, this is a question. This is directed at Rich and Rich only.
Okay.
This is a question from our American friend, Todd DeWitt.
Yes. Hello, Todd.
He just says, does Rich only eat KFC?
That tweet wasn't me. I feel like I need to put that out there now. I think that was Jordan was covering the game today. What did I have for... I can't even remember what I had for my halftime snack today. I think I had crisps today. I didn't do a my halftime snack club today because it was feeling very uninspired. So, no, if I could just eat KFC, I would. But unfortunately not.
Nothing's stopping you.
Apart from maybe a heart attack.
Heart attack and my own level of financial irresponsibility.
He'd be dead, isn't it? Well, it'd be a better way to go than AIDS, I suppose. But there you go.
And we do actually have a title by the end of the show.
And on that cheery note, I think we'll call it to a close there now. So my thanks to Rich, Luke and Stu. Hopefully things get better, guys. We'll catch you later.
Kentucky Fried Cooking.